Welcome to Blether Together, brought to you by Farmstrong Scotland. I'm your host, Sarah Stephen, and together we'll be travelling across Scotland to chat to farmers and crofters to learn more about them, their businesses, challenges, and the positive steps they take to manage their well-being. Our thanks go to NFU Mutual Charitable Trust for supporting the podcast series and to our founding funders, Movember and the Royal Highland Agricultural Society of Scotland. Michael Blanche is no stranger to most within the Scottish farming and crofting world, thanks to his renowned podcast, The Pasture Pod, which combines good stories with excellent humour. Located in Perthshire, Michael started his farming career with 50 sheep in 2003 and now runs 600 yows and a suckler herd. In our blether today, we will find out how he manages his time and why it has become a core focus for him both on the farm and on his podcast. And as I found out, he is also a terrible mimic, a great comic, and a daily meditator. Michael Blanche, welcome. You're coming to us from Kulchukur, have I got that right?
It's Kulchukur, Sarah.
Kulchukur. It's always good to check. Because when I first started in broadcasting, I moved from Edinburgh Cable Television Company to Aberdeen, and I was doing a GMTV, that takes us back, doesn't it? GMTV morning report, and there was a report about Craigellachie, and there was an incident at Craigellachie, and I came in and said, I don't know how many people will be up at that time in the morning, 10,000, maybe even 100, I don't even know, and I said, there's been an incident at Craigellachie.
Yeah.
And came back into the newsroom and there was a sea of grey faces just looking at me. I thought, always good to check. I'll probably still get it wrong during the podcast. But
well, everyone calls it Kulchukur, so it's just, I'm pedantic that way, Sarah, so you just better watch it.
Well, Michael Blanche, welcome to Blether Together. What do you call yourself if you are from that part of the world? A Kulchukurian?
It'll be Kulchukur, if that was a thing. Come on.
I just wanted to see if you picked up on it.
No, I mean, plenty of people call me a lot of things, but not that.
Okay, great. That's good to know. And you did open a can of worms right at the beginning of the podcast by saying that we might have to bleep out the swear word. So I can see what's coming. This is going to be great.
No, I'm not swearing.
Michael, let's go. It's great to speak to you and great to have you on the podcast. I know you're a bit of an expert at podcasts, so you'll keep me right. Tell me a bit about where it all started, farming, why you wanted to do it, why you got into it, you know, where that desire came from.
Well, it's a long story and I've told it so often, Sarah, I bore myself. So I'll try and keep it short. But I am a first generation farmer. So my parents weren't for farming. I'm probably a last generation farmer, actually, because I don't think my kids are going to, you know, they haven't swallowed the farming pill. We moved up to the northeast of Scotland, to Banffshire, when I was 3 years old. And we moved to a house in a hamlet that was dominated by a big farm. And I just loved the farm. I loved the farm. I got lots of farming toys and had sheep that didn't die. Had the last tractor I probably owned. And I just became obsessed by it from there. All through my teens and 20s, I was told it's probably not worth farming because you haven't got a start. There's nothing to come into, but I had a sort of early midlife crisis in my early 30s and I got some sheep. And I think that was the biggest step in the whole thing, was actually just deciding to start. I told my wife I'd get 10. I came back with 50. I put them on a credit card. And
for the kids that are listening, that's something that you actually hold in your wallet and you don't
do the balance transfers anymore, do they? But I basically didn't start from nothing. I started with less than nothing because I put it on the credit card. And the credit card company still phone every day, which is nice.
I know that feeling.
Yeah, I started from there and we got 50. I just rented 12 acres nearby. We got to 150 on 7 different holdings. It was really ridiculous. And my plan was, I then left SEC as a consultant and I left them. And went on to do my own thing, my own consultancy. And the idea was just to build up sheep numbers and reduce consultancy. But consultancy was the cash cow, the business growth. And all this time, we were trying to get a farm tenancy. So we're on seasonal lets for 7 years. We tried for 7 different tenancies. The last of those 7 was in Selkirk. It was such an opportunity. It was such a great farm. And the first 6, I didn't even get on the shortlist because I didn't offer enough money and there's so much interest. And then the 7th, I did get on the shortlist. I got an interview, I thought it went really well. And the phone call, you wait for the phone call then, eh? And then, wait too long and the phone rings. And then, you answer and they say, you came second. And that was a gut punch. And you get 7 years of trying, seven failures. You think, oh, God, this may be not worth it. So it's either not worth it or I had to do something different. So I went on a Nuffield scholarship on, and I studied first generation farmers, just seeing how people. I didn't really know any other first generation farmers, and it was awesome just to go around the world hearing lots of stories and stories of such resilience, and it really made me feel very small. Yeah, so that was really good exercise. Learned a lot. We came back, went for our eighth tenancy, and that was Culchucker. It was the best one. Good things come to those who wait, and that's how we started in farming. And really, as a first generation farmer, you always want to know when you've arrived as a farmer. I'm not sure you ever do because we've only got, well, I was up to 1,000 ewes at one point and looking after another 400 on a contract basis. It's just too many sheep. So we've cut back to 550 ewes or 600 ewes this year, it will be, and 80 cows or 80 to the bull at least. So, yeah, we're not big deal farmers, but it's something. And I think we're going to get bigger with the cows, definitely.
You've rattled through that experience. What's really stuck with me from what you said was just that perseverance that you had despite rejection, multiple times to keep going and to keep applying. That must have been challenging for you and for your family to keep going.
Yes. And obviously, you get to points where you think you should give up because it's not happening. And actually, when I was 5 years at a sort of seasonal let down in Salon near in West Fife, 35 miles from our house, if you calculate that out 3 times a week, 70 mile round trip, that's the equivalent of over twice the circumference of the globe. And to do that in the hope that something better is coming, there might be a screw loose, Sarah, I'm thinking. But I suppose it was something I was really keen on is living a life of consequence. I mean, SEC is a great company, but you're working for someone and they project onto you their vision of you. And I didn't think they rated me all that highly. And I was fed up with that. So I was determined to make something and do something that was of consequence. That's what kept me going. And when you go to Australia and you go to the outback and they've been in 9 years of concurrent drought, and you see the resilience that those people have, it's nothing compared to what those guys do.
I mean,
It's all perspective, isn't it?
absolutely. And you sound like you have that resilience within you, which you need for farming. There's no doubt. You seem super positive. You have a lovely, jovial way about you. And I'm just wondering, here's a theory. The people I've met along the way that are tenant farmers and have had to apply and go through the process like you have seem to be so grateful and positive and enterprising, because they've been given this chance to do what really is their first love, as opposed to those that potentially are second generation, third generation, fourth generation that do it because there's maybe no other option, or maybe they feel there's pressure on them to follow into the family business. And therefore, I'm not saying that people that do inherit a farm do sit on what they've got. There's lots of enterprising farmers out there across ownership and tenancies. But I just wonder if the people that I've, if there's something about the way you approach farming now that is just different to other people you come across who have inherited a farm.
Yeah, I'm really aware that everyone's attitude is built from their own experience, isn't it? And I think I can speak for myself in that, for example, there's a sort of fractious landlord-tenant relationship, and that me as a tenant should actually really get annoyed with my landlord. But actually, I am so grateful to my landlord for giving me a chance. And I think that's reflected in our relationship. I think we've got a good, really good relationship because I'm, it's a transaction that he's taken a punt on me, and I'm really grateful for it. And I'll always be grateful for it. And I'm really grateful to walk out that door and mince about on my farm because I've spent 8 years not being able to, walk out my farmhouse door and see my sheep. That was, I had to travel 3/4 of an hour to go and see them. So I'm so
It was a
grateful.
commute, which is odd, a
Yeah.
commute to your farm. It's a strange thing.
So I think it's just the experience I've had. Yeah, I am pretty positive. You get a bit cheesed off sometimes. There's a lot of farmers that just know a lot. They've been brought up with it from the when they've been in the cot. It's just so soaked into them. But I've got so much to learn. I do feel it's just sort of a lifetime's work, this. I see it a lot in farming where people have a sort of journey of them, their own journey. They start at a certain point and they build up to another point, which is better. And some people have to extend that point, they have to go beyond it and get bigger and, but some people get to the S, top of the S, if you like, and plateau, and then get really bored because they've done it and they've made huge strides. Now, because I'm so incompetent, I stretch that S curve out
I mean,
to so it, my whole life's going to be a learning curve.
you're incredibly self-deprecating, and I think people that are listening who know you and listen to your podcast will know that you're incredibly knowledgeable, and you're obviously, as you say, you're soaking things up as you go. I just wanted to go back to one word that you used that I thought that was very interesting, because the work that I used to do in broadcasting, and I still feel it to this day, you use the word imposter, and that goes back to imposter syndrome. And is that something you feel, and why do you feel that? I mean, you've really earned the right to be where you're being. Is that because you look at first generation farmers who have soaked the knowledge, as you say, in from the time they're in their cot to now? Do you feel you always have to try and prove yourself?
Well, I think I've stopped. I think that's more in the past, Sarah, but that's very perceptive of you. Well done. But I remember sitting around the huge table with all the global Nuffields. And there's one, he said, you have to introduce yourself. And he says, "My name's Todd. I finish 500,000 cattle a year." And I got it. And
So he was from
from
India.
Wales, yes. And even on my year, there's a guy with 1,500 dairy cows, and I only had 650 sheep. There is a phrase, isn't it? You're going to tell me it, but it's comparison is the thief of joy or something like that. And I did learn that. And I did learn that actually, if you're doing a benchmarking exercise with other people, you've got to take it on a holistic level. Because if he's got more finishing cattle or more dairy cows than I have sheep, I mean, that's fine. You've got other things to offer. That was a really important lesson, is comparison is, but you naturally do it. It's a default position, isn't it? You do compare, and then you have to almost check yourself to sort of stop yourself doing that. But yeah, I definitely feel an imposter because there's some days that you get things wrong and you think, ah, you've got to be careful with levels of expectations, because you can tell a story that's very, very positive, but I think that's why I'm self-deprecating, just as a safety net
Yeah.
in
And
case.
it's also a Scottish way, isn't it, to deflect. Don't tell me, no, I don't want to hear that. Ooh, that's ooh, yeah, no.
Yeah. Oh, no,
Let's
yeah.
take the mickey out of each other. So I've just, comparison is a thief of joy, and it's a quote attributed to Theodore Roosevelt, the 26th president of the United States.
Check you out. You know, like loads.
Listen, hey, Google, I'm not saying anything else.
Okay.
I rely on Google. So before we move on, because I'm conscious, hopefully there are lots of young listeners out there who perhaps are in the same boat as you, wanting to get into farming, but don't have that farm to step into. What's your advice to them from that sort of tenacity, the tenancy point of view? We can use the two T's, how to be tenacious in getting a tenancy. What's your sort of advice to them about that?
Don't do it. Joking, joking, I'm joking.
Okay, cut. Let's go back to the positive.
No, I tell you, I remember listening to a chap who got interviewed saying, because I was all for, yeah, you've got to believe it. Just live the dream, just pursue it, and don't let anything stop you. And there's a really great guy, a sheep musterer from Queensland, who said, "Giving up is easy, but to be special, you never give up." And I thought, wow, that's really great. But then I heard a chap who said, "Look, some people can get into real bother. All this living the dream stuff, it sounds great, but there's a downside to this. You could get into serious financial difficulties. So if you're going to listen to that inner voice, if you really want to do it, I know people that I speak to, and I did a Nuffield report, and the only person that read it was a guy that started into farming. And he teases me saying it's his Bible and he reads it every week. I'm not sure if he's serious. But I see all his trials and tribulations and I cringe because I go, oh my God, if that report did encourage him into farming, I feel slightly guilty. But it's a real great, he's having a great time falling at various hurdles. But
Yeah.
I think you've got to be realistic that it's going to be tough.
Tough is okay.
Tough is okay. It's also relative, isn't it? I mean, we didn't really go on holiday much and I had to cut down on my beer consumption. So that's not tough, is it?
it's great advice. You seem very positive, and I'm sure there have been some dark moments in that experience as well.
Well, no, they're just mostly candy floss and rainbows and stuff like that, Sarah. No, I suppose.
Dark's a quite a strong word, but there must have been moments when I'm sure you and your wife were sitting across the kitchen table and thought, right, what's plan B? This doesn't work.
Yeah,
Where else are
absolutely.
we going to go?
Absolutely. Especially cash. Cash has been a real worry for us constantly. It's getting better now, I would say, but that monetary strain is always been there and sometimes gets you down a bit. I think the times that I've been really challenged up top, and it's not really challenged. I mean, it's not, it's all relative, isn't it? But actually, when you are trying to strive for something and you've got an inner motivation, a real drive not to compromise and just go for it, it's actually quite easy. It's when you stop a little, it's when you sort of those little plateaus, you sort of think, oh, you sort of deflate a wee bit. And then I have to sort of get my head in order and then try and do something, take the next step.
You have to get up the next day and get on with it.
Yes. Yeah.
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 PastorPod,
Oh, yes.
the hugely successful and no doubt soon to be multiple award-winning podcast that you've created.
Well, I'm still waiting for the emails, Sarah.
How did this come about? Where did that all come from?
Well, I was planting a mile of hedge on my own, and that I'm not sure if you've done that, Sarah, but it's quite boring. My mind is bad because it whirs, and it actually gains momentum. It's like a rotary engine. And so I have to stop my mind whirring. And so I started listening to these. This is back in 2016, I think. I started listening to podcasts. There weren't many about, but I enjoyed them. And I thought, well, that'd be really good for a farming one. Will Evans, I'm not sure if Rock and Roll Farming. Will Evans, who's a bit of a hero, he started that and he did one every week. I thought, so it can be done. I left QMS actually and I got a nice leaving present of money. So I bought a sound recorder and a couple of microphones. I interviewed a friend first, who was John Scott, who you've interviewed, and he's very easy, isn't he? And then I put something out and I did, had a talking dog that told jokes and I sang my own theme tune. Yeah, it started from there. And I don't do very many. I've only just released one, and that's first in a year. It's normally about 4 a year. I've concentrated on a Patreon page, actually, which I am podcasting quite a lot on that. But the normal Pastor Pod is infrequent, but very long,
Well,
about
my
two or
husband
three
listens
hours.
to it and he's a big fan. There you go. You have a listener.
Right, awesome. I knew someone would.
He's the man that's outraged from Old Meldrum and he's giving you the feedback, by the
Yes.
You mentioned John Scott there and he's a very easy talker, as are you. So is it the conversation? Is it the share of knowledge, experience? What do you enjoy most about it?
Well, we had a great conversation, me and John, and then I realized I hadn't actually pressed record. And then we had to have another conversation. I love talking about farming. I actually love talking about people and just sort of dig it. You'll get this, Sarah. You sort of dig a little bit deeper, and try and find their motivation and stuff. I just find people fascinating. And I think you can learn something from anyone, actually. And I think everyone's got a really good story. That's my job, is to find that real interesting story. I just love talking about farming and I love finding answers. What I don't like is tire kicking and talking in generalities. I just like to, that's why it's so long, because I really like to dig deep.
People are interesting. I wholly agree. I mean, we used to travel the length and breadth of the country with what I used to do. And, you'd find yourself heading back up to Balnakilk and sort of Cape Wrath and knowing that you're doing a piece on, the lesser spotted snail of the North Coast 500. You'd have to really muster, energy and joy to do it. But when you got there, those people were so absolutely invested in that subject. You couldn't help but think, well,
Yeah.
they're doing something that they really love. And I think that when people do things that they really love, it really comes across. And
It's
then they're
so
interesting to
true.
you. I may not be pursuing the lesser spotted snail of the North Coast 500, but that's a really fascinating subject to them. And when people have a passion and they're the expert and they share that, it comes across.
Perfectly put.
To move on from the podcast and just, you've started it and it is popular. And whatever you say, I know there's lots of people that listen to it. So well done with that. It's a fantastic achievement. I hope it continues to be successful. Time management, Michael Blanche, is your thing. These are your buzzwords. Explain.
Because I'm so bad at it, I'd had this pasture pod, which was just talking dog, singing theme tune, and then long interview. So what I was thinking was, well, wouldn't it be great? I love listening to Radio 4 because I'm over 50. I love these documentaries that they do. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to do, instead of one long interview with one person, how about have little interviews with lots of people? And this time thing, because I've already mentioned first generation, last generation farmer, I am 54 now. I have got 10 years before I retire because that's how long the tenancy lasted. So if I don't want to live in the central reservation of a motorway in a cardboard box with my wife, we need to get some capital together. And the clock is ticking, tick tock, tick tock. It is really, there's a pressure now. I did this documentary series under the guise of the Pasture Pod. I got some funding for it. We did six episodes, and it was really the premise of, I thought time was the, we talk about financials and farming, we talk about the technical details of what to do, when to do it, but we never talk about time. We never talk about how long all this takes. And when you're assessing an enterprise, you assess it financially, you assess how you're going to do it. Very rarely people consider how long it's going to take. And I just thought it was the hidden dimension of farming.
So, who was on your wish list of who to speak to? Who have you spoken to that's been a real inspiration on the podcast?
Well, I spoke to lean management gurus. Lean management is just cutting waste out of everything you do, so you've got more time. An agricultural time management consultant, I think he's the only person in the world that does that job, but he was great. Another time consultant from here, a time management consultant. I spoke to Oliver Berkman, who was a New York Times best-selling author who wrote 4,000 Weeks, which I think roughly adds up to 81 years. The premise of that is that that's what we've got. His argument is that once you accept that this 81 years is finite, or your life is finite, it leads to all sorts of good stuff. So you act in a different way, you savor different things, you know, just that acceptance. You're not going to live forever. No one does. So that was really good. And I spoke to loads of farmers, and they were probably some of the best ones, some that had actually got close to nailing it. There was a lot of people I spoke to. It's far too long, Sarah.
I can't imagine that.
When I did it, I had 12 seasons left, and I joked that that is the same number of fingers that pipers have. And can cut
Apologies to all fifers who
that.
are listening to the podcast.
But you know, it's just, you got three, you got 10, you 12 lambings, 12 calvings. There's not a lot. When you think of it that way, it's really, you've got to really savor all these things. And the other thing is, how do I, as a disorganized person, make every minute count or every day count on this journey to achieving enough capital so we can actually live in a house on retirement? So actually, every day does count. And when you start at the end and work back, you realize that. So I just spoke to people, and I think it's a real issue in farming. I actually did an episode wholly on dairy farmers. And we had one lady who, she worked with her husband. So they had robots and 130 Holstein cows. And she worked 13 hours a day, 7 days a week. When they tried to get away, the robot would bleep at them and they had to come back. It was a hamster wheel. And she was on the Farmers of the UK Twitter account. And that's why I wanted to go and see her. And, you know, normally people sort of market themselves, put a shine on it a wee bit. She did no such thing. She told the total truth of how miserable it was. And it was in the darkest days of January that she did it. But it was so fascinating to see. And I don't think that's uncommon. I interviewed another couple who were really great people, but they hadn't had a day off in 2 years. And so I think it's a real issue. I was actually just working with a young 15-year-old guy who's related to his uncle and granddad farm. And I think he could actually be a farmer if he wanted to be, but he doesn't want to do it because all he sees is drudgery. And that's not a good advert for us. It really isn't. I wanted to see what I could do personally and see if it had a wider implication.
I suppose I'm thinking, why? Why is it drudgery? I mean, I suppose any job, most people out there, well, there'll be moments in any job, you're 7 days a week, whatever, 365, when they get up in the morning and say, I don't want to do this. So that's life. There's an element of that is life. But why is that? Why is farming seen that way? And why can it be drudgery? Is it the system? And without, you know, I don't know, you can get political, you can say anything you like, you know, it's just, where do you see the nub of the problem?
It is fascinating, isn't it? I'm still not quite sure, but I have a very strong sense it's cultural. I think in Europe, the UK is known as the tired man of Europe because we think hard work is the answer. In many respects, I've had a Calvinist upbringing and been told hard work is the answer. And in many respects, it is. I'm not saying hard work is not for me or not for anyone else, but it's a really good phrase that my friend Charlie Walker keeps coming up with is that we might be doing things right, but are we doing the right things? And so you can work really hard on the wrong thing and do it really well. You've got to choose the right thing. The other thing is the 80-20 rule. So you can get 80% of the benefit from 20% of the input. And I think we want to get 100% of the benefit and therefore spend 80% of our time doing very low return stuff. So I think it is cultural. And we have a definite, especially farms. Farms are really fascinating because basically people can drive past your farm and see it. Other farmers can drive past your farm and see it. They can look over the valley and see it. So we're very conscious of what other people think. And there's this great phrase about that I just happened to serendipity, but I heard this lady on social media come out with this quote, this influencer, and she said about what other people think of you. It was, don't give front row opinions to people that have paid for nosebleed seats. That which means the people that aren't invested in you or support you or care for you, do not value their opinion, please. That is really unhealthy because it's a tail wagging the dog thing, and you will be spending time trying to please them when they don't care.
A lovely sentiment. And it's funny you mentioned that about farmers because I'm married to one and, we could be traveling wherever we are traveling. We can go from 60 to 20 fairly rapidly. And he's like the Churchill dog, his head's from side to side. I'm like, what's happening? What's going on? Just seeing what's going on about. And I'm like, well, we've got to be here at this time. And, farmers love to just have a nosy.
Yes, absolutely.
I would say curiosity is a kind way of putting it, but
Yeah,
nosiness
absolutely.
is
And
the
isn't
other
that
way.
sometimes healthy,
Yeah.
but
And it's funny you talk about that Calvinism within you because in the same way, I grew up in a household that my father is, used to quote John Knox and say, don't spend more than you earn and, you work hard. And there was never a work hard, play hard theme. It was always work
no,
hard.
work
And
hard.
yeah, no, that's it. Knowledge is power and I don't have any power. I have no knowledge. So we digress a little bit, but how is that sort of time management, that approach, how has it helped you and your sort of health and well-being to use the sort of the term that we have to use? How has that affected your mental health and your attitude?
That's a good question. I think it's one of those other things that I really love to get my teeth into because it is very against the grain. So I'm naturally chaotic. Paul Akers, who is a big deal in the lean management community, he described it as identifying your weakness and then addressing that weakness aggressively. And I think that's a real challenge for me. And I do see it as a key to success in farming for me because that's my weakness. I actually, you have a devil on your shoulder, you definitely do. And it's a self-talk about, oh my God, you're looking for this again, you idiot. it actually, that voice on your shoulder has a depreciating effect on your well-being, I would say. I used to spend my life looking for stuff. If that stops, and if you see your systems on your farm clearer and you make adjustments for that, it's just freeing. It's really, really exciting. It's a constant battle with my natural habits. I think it's probably going to be, never mind just starting to farm, but the biggest challenge, I think, is me addressing this chaotic habit and becoming efficient in my time use and, really effective in how I use my time. I think that's actually a bigger challenge.
You've been kind enough to offer your support to Farmstrong and you've engaged with them on multiple occasions. How important is that for you to give back?
I suppose I just feel I would get some jet from John Scott and Jock Gibson if I didn't do it. So is it fear? Fear
So,
is
yeah, peer pressure, that's what it's called.
But no, I think it's a good thing. I just see people, and I actually see people on social media even where this self-talk is really, I worry about some people. I just feel they need a hug. And just if they adjusted something in the mentality, it would be so much easier for them. I think Farmstrong is such a good place, and I think there's loads to do, and it's just making that connection with people. that makes a difference. And I think Farmstone's a really good shot at it.
You can use as many words as you like, but keep it brief. But takeaways to the young folks out there that are listening who want to get into farming or who perhaps are farming, what are your key words of advice, your takeaways from your experience? What would you like to offer them?
Oh gosh, that's a good question, Sarah. I think there's a few things. I think you've got to be absolutely sure you really want to do it. It's not all sunshine and rainbows. There's going to be some difficulties, but actually, it's the difficulties that make it so rewarding. So you've got to be prepared for that. But if you really want to do it, I think that those words from the Aussie sheep master, giving up is easy, but to be special, never give up, has followed me everywhere since I heard them. And I suppose, yeah, be sure that you want to do it. And when you do do it, be yourself. Don't try and be other people. Understand what you need to do to get to where you want to be. I'm going to bastardize this quote, but the definition of success is living your life your own way. And I just love that because that is what you got to do. I don't own a tractor. I own one Polaris, and people think I'm nuts. I rotationally graze, and the neighbors think I must have shares in an electric fence company, and they laugh at me. But that's what I have to do to get to where I want to be. And that's me. And that, having the courage of being yourself and doing what you need to do, not what they want you to do. They come from a totally different place. So you've got to own yourself and do your own thing.
Well said, and very beautifully put. So I just wanted to make you aware, did I not say at the beginning that any swear words, money goes in the jar for the
Oh no, you didn't say
Farmstrong
that. 50 pounds
drinks,
of
Christmas
swear
drinks. Yeah, at least a fiver for that one. You seem really upbeat. So how do you manage your well-being?
Well, I don't want you to think I'm weird, but I
There's so
actually
much I can say there.
I meditate every morning. I tell
That's a
you what I
first for
do.
me to hear.
Yeah, I meditate and I write down what I'm going to do during the day. I have a list, and then I write down what I'm going to focus on, what I'm grateful for, and what I'm going to let go. And that's my morning routine. I'm out the door by 11. Yeah, but I do meditate. It's only 5 minutes, but there's a lady called Holly Beckett who started Focus Farmers, and I did that during. I was feeling quite flat. I was getting angry. I was getting jealous of people, which I never do. And I thought, well, I might try this Focus Farmers thing. And she wouldn't tell you what it was. And of course, we started meditating. I thought, this is really, really weird. I don't like this. I don't like it. But man, when you start, we all have these movies in our mind. And what meditation does is just take you back to the present, be in the moment. And that is so healthy for you. You see loads of sportsmen talk about just being, they just try and be in the moment. And that makes them really effective. They will all meditate, I guarantee you. So it's not that weird, but don't judge me.
No judgment here. This is a safe space. Well, Michael, I read recently that if we are lucky, if one is lucky, we have 80 summers to enjoy. And it's been a pleasure and a joy to have a little bit of my summer spending time with you. What shall I say? I don't know how many. I think I've got maybe less than 30 summers left, given what 80 summers we've got to enjoy. And I thought that was a really neat way of putting, as you mentioned, life and taking grasp of it, taking hold of it. We don't have long left.
I've done time seminars for AHDB, and I bring along a grid of 80 squares, and they have to fill in up to their age. Only the blank squares you've got left. Now, it's embarrassing when people are over 80. It really is a visual thing. I think I would encourage people to do that so they can get
That's
to.
a that, that yeah. That's a lovely. That's a yeah. I can see that. I can actually visualize that and where I would be on that grid. But it's been a joy and a pleasure to speak to you. It's just been lovely to hear your story, and you're infectious. Your attitude and your
I have
joviality is
to.
infectious. There we go. But Michael, thank you very much.
Well, thanks so much, Sarah. It's been great to speak to you.
Likewise, likewise.
We hope you enjoyed today's blether and it has provided some inspiration for your own well-being. One small step can make a big impact. Find something that works for you. To read our latest stories and news, download our resources and tools, or connect with Farmstrong Scotland, visit our website, allthews.farmstrongscotland.org.uk, or follow us on social media.